Two authors with strong Albany ties, Gregory Maguire and Barbara Smith, will be honored at the second annual Literary Legends event on Saturday, November 14th. The Literary Legends event recognizes outstanding local authors, illustrators, and publishers for their extraordinary contributions to the art of letters. Maguire and Smith join last year's honorees William Kennedy, Paul Grondahl, and Amy Biancoli at Albany Literary Legends. Maguire is an Albany native who received international acclaim for his Wicked series of novels, the first of which tells the story of L. Frank Baum's Wicked Witch of the West and was turned into the wildly successful Broadway musical Wicked. He's written dozens of books and short stories. His latest is After Alice, a magical new twist on Alice's adventures in Wonderland, published to coincide with the 150th anniversary of Lewis Carroll's beloved classic. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Gregory Maguire to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, thank you, Joe, for inviting me. I'm delighted to be talking with you today.
The Albany Public Library Foundation has named you a literary legend. What does that mean to you, sir?
Well, I would like to return the compliment and name the Albany Public Library a literary legend because as a foundation stone of my childhood experience, the Prine Library across the street from the Palace back in the day, Palace Theater, the Harmonis Bleecker Library back when it was still erect, and the Pine Hills Library back when it was in that giant high Victorian building on Madison Avenue between Partridge and North Main.
Right.
These were the crucibles of my literary education and the annealing, the places where my imagination was annealed, inspired, and released. So I applaud the Albany Public Library as I applaud all libraries, but in a much more personal way because I love it with personal affection.
As you said, you used the term of your imagination, of what it allowed you to do. When you were a kid and you were in these libraries, what were you looking for? What was the kind of thing that you were looking for?
Well, I was mostly looking for escape from the constrictions of my childhood, which were partly the constrictions of any childhood. I mean, children need to be held close and constrained in order to be kept safe. But my childhood was perhaps a little bit more constricted than some others in the 50s and 60s, in that my family was preternaturally and even morbidly anxious from time to time. So the liberty that the library allowed a budding intellectual kid was almost the only liberty that we had. We didn't have the liberty of two-wheeler bicycles. We didn't have the liberty of long summer vacations on the lake. Money and anxiety kept us from those liberties. But we had free range with our library card upstairs and down in every section of the library. And my parents admired writing. They admired reading. They promoted it. And they never censored any book that came into the house, no matter from which department it had been taken out.
Which leads me to think that you had a wide range of interests. There wasn't one genre that you were looking at, that your interests were all over the place.
No, that's quite true. When I moved to Pine Hills at the beginning of fourth grade, which was about 63, I guess, the Pine Hills Library was right next door to VI grade school where I went and where later on I taught. And I could float around. I floated immediately up that grand wooden staircase, which is like a waterfall, a cataract in wood, up to the second floor where the children's room was. And I began to read in the children's fiction section, starting with the A's. I survived all of Louisa May Alcott, which is a testament to my perseverance. And then I got to the B's. And I got to J.M. Barrie with Peter Pan, and I got to L. Frank Baum with The Wizard of Oz, and then I got as far as the C's, where I got Lewis Carroll and Alice in Wonderland. At about that time, my campaign fell into pieces, because I was, after all, not a child, not a little Oxford scholar. That was about as far as I could go. But look at what I got between J.M. Barrie, L. Frank Baum, and Lewis Carroll. Thank God their names began with early letters of the alphabet, because I got Wonderland, I got Neverland, and I got Oz, all in fourth grade. boy, what a magic set of passports those were.
At what point in your life do you think, I mean, obviously, as you say, they've had great resonance to you. So it's the 150th anniversary of Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, as I mentioned. And your new novel is After Alice, tells the story of Wonderland from the perspective of Ada, who is Alice's friend, who is mentioned only briefly.
Only once is she mentioned in Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. And what I find very curious is that Alice's Adventures in Wonderland are presented to us as a dream. And yet, Joe, I bet if I, you know, was sitting across the table from you with a cup of coffee or a glass of scotch, and I'd say, tell me your five most interesting dreams, I would propose, Joe, that none of them would be exempt from including dramatis personae from your actual life.
Sure.
That is to say, you know, your dead grandmother or your soccer coach in middle school, or you know, they would be showing up, haunting you, making life miserable or making life fun, whatever they were doing. But your dreams are populated by people you know, at least in part. Now, Alice in Wonderland has almost no reference to her above-ground Oxford life. Not her father, not her mother, not her big sister who was supposed to be babysitting her. The only persons that she mentions in one paragraph in this dream of wondrous experiences are her two friends, Mabel and Ada. Mabel is dreadfully stupid, and so Alice figures she can't have been turned into her. But Ada has long ringlets, and so maybe Alice has turned into Ada. That's the only mention we get of Ada, but by that I figured Ada must be pretty important to Alice, so I am going to take down the clue that Lewis Carroll laid for me to find 150 years ago, and I'm going to find out who Ada is and what happens when she falls into Wonderland.
It takes up the question of when Alice disappears into Wonderland, what happened to her sister left behind?
Yes, and you know, a dream has, unless it's a nightmare, it has very little initiative. It just kind of unrolls at about the same rate and about the same degree of interest level to the dreamer. And that might be fine if you're used to reading postmodern novels or if you're a literary scholar of some sort. But most of us want a story with a little plot. And so After Alice, I have devised to run on two different levels. One is the Wonderland level underground, where Ada is searching for Alice, getting increasingly a little anxious that Alice might need rescuing. But above ground, Alice's sister, who was supposed to be babysitting, has noticed that her baby sister has disappeared and first tries to hide the information from others in the household, but eventually must confess to her father that she has misplaced her younger sister and her younger sister may be in danger. It's that kind of Mary Higgins Clark, you know, what happened to the children sort of plot that I hope will energize readers through a novel that is otherwise based on fantasy and whimsy.
I read a review recently of the new book, and there was a line in there, which is kind of a throwaway line, but it just stuck with me, which is that that this continues with the tradition of rewriting fairy tales. But you don't really rewrite fairy tales.
You know, that's why I like talking to you, Joe, because you actually notice things like that. You're absolutely right. I don't rewrite fairy tales. I very often will tell a story that has some recognizable literary DNA. And I do that not because I'm lazy and not because I'm mercantile. I mean, I may be mercantile and I may be lazy, but that's not why I do my creative work the way that I do it. I do it because I am still compelled by the memory of the books that I read from the Albany Public Library when I was a child. They are my foundation documents of my character, as important to me as were the Gospels that I got, you know, going to Sunday Mass, and the lessons in civics that I got hearing about George Washington and the cherry tree and Abraham Lincoln and walking 5 miles to return a nickel. A culture has foundational documents. We might say Robinson Crusoe and the Constitution and Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address are foundational documents of our American culture, our culture of pick yourself up by the bootstraps and get on with it. Maybe Walden, too. Maybe The Wizard of Oz, too. But a childhood also has its foundational documents. And the documents of magic that suggest to a child that the world is wider and more mysterious than the adults are letting on are documents of great liberation. And I return to them because I need continually to be re-liberated into my own life. They do this for me, and I hope by paying homage to them in my own writing that I can continue to help other people be liberated too.
And there is that idea throughout your work of great wonder, of a world, a place, and of course for the reader, how it so closely applies to the world we're living in.
I would like to think so, and I write in part to amuse and entertain readers, but I also write to keep myself engaged because I'm, you know, Irish-American. I'm fairly glib. I can talk for hours on almost nothing, but I'm actually a fairly slow thinker. I admire the process of thought, but I'm not deft at it. I could never have run for public office. I'd have nothing to say. Or maybe I could run for public office. Never mind about that. But the truth is that I write because I do get an idea, and writing is a slow process, and I think slowly, and I think through what the subconscious gives me to chew over. And I hope that what I think might be of interest to other people, and that they can share with me by reading my fiction.
You spend as much time thinking about the book as you do writing the book.
Oh, yes. In fact, by the time I get around to actually putting pencil to paper, it goes pretty quickly. Well, I'm the son of journalists. My father, John McGuire, worked for the Albany Times Union. He knew how to write sentences. He knew how to write paragraphs. And he knew how to hand in copy. So do I. I learned that skill in my wonderful household in North Albany and in Pine Hills. But I also learned not to put pen to paper until I felt I was beginning to know what the question was. I didn't just dash out anything. I had to wait, let something simmer for a very, very long time. Once it was time to start writing, though, I write with dispatch.
Well, Gregory McGuire and Barbara Smith will be honored at the second annual Literary Legends event on Saturday, November 14th, hosted by the Albany Public Library Foundation at the library's Delaware branch. You can find out more at albanypubliclibraryfoundation.org. albanypubliclibraryfoundation.org. Gregory McGuire's new novel is After Alice. It is published by Morrow. Gregory McGuire, congratulations. It's always a thrill to speak with you, and I thank you very much for doing so this morning.
Well, Joe, thank you for having me. I'm now going to hang up the phone. I'm going to go look at my bookshelves and see if there are any overdue books from the Albany Public Library that I should have returned 40 years ago.
Sounds good. We'll see you in Albany, and thanks again. Appreciate
it. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Again, Gregory McGuire will be honored with Barbara Smith at the Literary Legends event on Saturday, November 14th. You can find out more at albanypubliclibraryfoundation.org. His new novel, After Alice. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.